Again, bored our pub, croeso i'r digwyddiad heddiw. Good morning and welcome everyone to the launch, this launch event for our latest report, Sharing Power, Spreading Wealth, which examines how Wales can retain greater socio-economic benefit from the commercial renewable sector in Wales, ensuring a just and fair transition towards net zero. This report was produced as part of the IWA's ongoing focus on creating a successful, green and fair economy for Wales, and was produced with kind support from the Friends Provident Foundation, and was written by Lydia Godden, who joins me today, who is the IWA's Economic Policy and Research Officer. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Joe Rossiter, and I'm the IWA's Interim Co-Director and Policy and External Affairs Manager. And for those that don't know us yet, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank, and we've got a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through our policy research and advocacy work, our online and print publications, which provide platform for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events such as this one. But most importantly, we're a membership organisation with nearly 1,000 members across the country and far further afield. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and independent trusts and charitable foundations. Importantly, we're politically independent and we don't represent a specific sector, trade or interest group. Instead, what we seek to do is to bridge policy and institutional divides, and show what might be possible when we work together differently, seeking consensus where possible and robustly challenging the status quo when we need to. We're especially interested in facilitating long-term change on issues that will make a difference to Wales's economy and its democracy. We're currently running projects on creating a successful green and fair economy for Wales, and our Media and Democracy project published its final papers at the end of last year. And we are also running a project on Wales's constitutional future, which aims to further the conversation that was kicked off by the publication of the Independent Commission on the Constitutional Future of Wales's final report. Alongside this, we deliver highly regarded training sessions on the practice of how devolution works, which supports people across Wales to get their head around how to help shape effective policy using our own experience and expertise. If you'd like to know more about what we do and support us, please join us as a member and help shape Wales's future with us. There should be a link in the chat for those of you that are interested. And for those of you that are already members, thank you. Now on to this new piece of work and this new report, Sharing Power, Spreading Wealth Towards an Equitable Energy Transition. This piece of work comes from our economy portfolio, looking to make Wales's economy stronger, greener and fairer. Over recent months, Lydia has been undertaking desk-based research into the current provision of community benefit funds from the commercial renewable energy projects in Wales, and she's been exploring alternative ways communities can seek greater economic benefit from the renewable energy projects they host locally. And there's some jargon in that that Lydia, I'm sure, will break apart as well. And she's been busy over the last few months speaking to leading renewable energy developers, experts in the field, civil servants, and also those involved in administering community benefit funds, as well as community members who will seek to gain from Wales's renewable energy transition. So we've been exploring how Wales can use levers available to Welsh Government to ensure that communities across Wales retain greater share of the income generated from renewable energy projects, ensuring that communities get a share in those benefits, and this as a mechanism to a broader mechanism leading to a fairer economy in Wales as part of a just and fair transition to net zero over the next couple of decades. Firstly, a bit of housekeeping. Please do introduce yourselves and engage with others in the chat function. So say hello to each other. We have people joining us today from lots of different sectors, but we've got people from Welsh Government, the Senedd, number of renewable developers, Development Bank of Wales, amongst many others, and share your email if you're willing to be contacted by other attendees. As this is a webinar on Zoom, participants are muted by me, the host, and we're going to use the Q&A function. The Q&A section for questions rather than the chat function. So the chat function for introducing yourselves and discussing the paper, Q&A for specific questions you want to ask Lydia at the end of the session, and we've allocated quite a lot of time to that. So please have a look at the bottom of your screen and get thinking about your questions now and as Lydia presents the paper to you. But please be aware that all chat and questions are recorded. So yes, let's have a nice space. And we'll be keeping the event strictly to an hour. And if you feel particularly inspired to tweet, you can at us on at IWA underscore Wales. And we would suggest using IWA economy as a hashtag as well. And video and audio of today's event will be made available via our YouTube and podcast channels. And Lydia will be writing an upcoming article in the Welsh Agenda, where she'll be outlining some of the report's findings and exploring how Wales can and must achieve an equitable transition to net zero in a different kind of format. So if you've got any colleagues that were interested and can't attend, then please look out for the email, join our newsletters, and you can hear about everything we're doing. So now, enough of me. I'm going to ask Lydia Godden, our economic policy and research officer, to talk us through the findings of her paper before we open out to a Q&A from you, the audience. At its heart, this new paper aims to kickstart a national conversation about what type of transition to a green economy we want to see and how we can ensure greater ownership of resources and retention of economic benefits within Wales. We'd welcome your thoughts, so please get thinking as we go. And without further ado, Lydia, over to you.
Great, thanks, Joe. And hi, everyone, and thanks very much for attending the launch of our new paper, Sharing Power, Spreading Wealth, Towards an Equitable Energy Transition for Wales. And I can see some friendly faces in the audience and some people, developers, organisations that played a key role in feeding into the research paper. So thank you all for coming along to the launch. And like Joe said, if you have any interesting questions about the research or the findings, then we'll come to these next after I outline the paper. So just to start, I think the paper kind of has two parts. One part's a bit larger than the other. The first looks at the current provision of community benefit funds, any limitations there, and room for improvement and stronger policy in that area. And then we go on to look at, you know, what else can we look towards? It's not just community benefit funds, but wider sort of more novel policies that we can learn from case studies across other nations on how we can retain greater wealth. So that's how sort of this presentation will be set up before going on to the wider recommendations. So firstly, why research this topic? Well, evidently the need for Wales to meet net zero targets and tackle the climate emergency is clear, with successive years of devastating flooding in Wales, the impacts of climate change are already with us. Green energy generation presents many opportunities for a new, fairer system, with ambitious targets in relation to renewable energy generation from the Welsh Government, and planned investment in renewable energy set to drastically increase over the next decade. The question is no longer about if we can decarbonise, but how we want to decarbonise our energy system. And so the Welsh Government faces significant economic challenges with limited fiscal firepower, a weak borrowing powers, and a budget pre-allocated to public service delivery. Meanwhile, we believe the Welsh economy does not retain enough income from the renewable energy generation. So in this context, we believe that as investment in renewable energy infrastructure projects must increase to meet net zero targets, this presents a moment of opportunity to reassess the current economic impact of such projects within Welsh communities and explore ways to ensure Wales can retain a fairer share of the incomes generated. And it's important to also note that past energy transitions in Wales have been rather extractive of resources and profits, with limited long-term economic benefit retained within Welsh communities, and therefore, with this paper, we wanted to kickstart a national strategic conversation on how the Welsh Government and communities can work with the private sector together to retain greater income from renewable energy generation. So then onto the context and the wider context that our paper sort of sits within. I guess the report sits within wider discussions that are taking place across government, the third sector and civil society regarding how Wales can retain a greater share of the incomes produced from our natural resources. I mean, today you've got Keir Starmer up in North Wales announcing the UK Labour Party's plans for GB energy. And the main argument around that is to sort of have better energy security and retain power and financial benefit to the UK economy. So We feel that it's quite a timely time, if that makes sense, to put out this paper. And there we have a quote from former climate change minister Julie James there, also noting that perhaps the current system doesn't retain enough income to Welsh communities. So a number of renewables developers have also expressed a desire to achieve greater lasting benefits from their projects to the host communities through community benefit funds. So this report very much sits within that wider move as well. And due to the privatisation of the UK energy system, the majority of renewable energy generation in Wales is privately owned. A significant proportion of the incomes generated here flow elsewhere and benefit other governments via their publicly owned energy companies operating in Wales. And of the top 10 countries of leading renewable energy generation, it's no surprise that 9 have state-owned energy sectors. So as the full nationalisation of energy in the UK or in Wales remains an unlikely option, what other levers can we look to use to retain income within Welsh communities and Wales more broadly? So we know we cannot decarbonise the Welsh energy sector without working hand in hand with the private renewable sector. However, we aim to contribute to this wider discussion and explore how the Welsh Government can set the terms of exchange with industry, working together to ensure that Wales's energy sector is decarbonised whilst retaining greater economic and social benefits within communities without importantly detracting investment or reducing developer confidence in the Welsh market. Wales must utilise the nation's natural resources, but do so on its own terms. And our paper explores the need for stronger community benefit fund policy and guidance before examining alternative policy methods to retain greater economic benefits to communities in Wales. So how can renewable energy link to wider arguments of social justice and fairness? So here we explore the role of community benefit funds, particularly within onshore wind. It's increasingly common for developers to make voluntary payments to communities that host renewable energy infrastructure projects. And these are most commonly community benefit funds. And they're separate from wider economic benefits, such as local employment or supply chain links, but are becoming more common across other technologies, but are most heavily used within the onshore wind sector. And so the economic redistribution of profits from renewables developments to host communities can be viewed as a form of redistributive economics and justice, as a mouthful. So here we examine considerations of social justice within the context of former coalfield communities in Wales. And wealth redistribution is particularly important, we believe, where renewable energy infrastructure is located in economically disadvantaged and less resilient communities. So research shows that the development of onshore renewable infrastructure is not evenly spread across Wales and largely does operate in places already adversely affected by fossil fuel extraction and the former fossil industry in Wales. So research by the Coalfields Regeneration Trust in Wales finds that the proposed developments of national significance projects in Wales, 54% of wind farm proposals and 44% of solar farms are located within the heart of the South Wales Valleys, which is one of the most deprived areas in the UK. And this is often because previously industrialised areas actually do have better infrastructure, grid capacity and access roads. So it does, you know, make sense as to why developments have often sort of focused on those areas. However, this can lead to a belief that some disadvantaged communities must host renewable infrastructure, while other highly valued areas of perhaps natural beauty and more affluent communities are protected. And therefore, feelings of unfairness can endure over time. And maybe there's an idea that more resourced sort of affluent areas would be better, have better capacity to oppose projects, whereas more economically disadvantaged communities won't. And furthermore, research from 2021 by Calvin Jones found that residents in former coal mining communities in the UK were highly politically disengaged, with low levels of trust and political efficacy, and were more sceptical towards climate change when compared to socio-economic counterparts elsewhere in the UK. So with the development of renewables projects often taking place in Wales near disadvantaged communities, there is a risk that people may observe change in local landscapes, but with little local benefit to their community while they continue to experience issues like fuel poverty and the ongoing cost of living crisis. So where this happens in areas of economic disadvantage, the provision of community benefit funds is a matter of redistributive justice and feeds into wider arguments of a just transition. There is a need to acknowledge that such social and political attitudes exist in Wales's former coalfield communities, and may actually underpin negative perceptions of renewables developments and local concern. And therefore, rather than dismiss these concerns as, you know, maybe opposition linked to climate change denial or NIMBYism, we argue that this scepticism increases the need actually for redistributive methods to have a genuine impact, restoring trust and enabling engagement with the climate transition, and should primarily be perceived as a key aspect of the just transition and a way to build local resilience. So then, looking at exploring models of energy ownership in Wales, you'll have to excuse my drinks, I've got a slight sore throat. So given this, what Welsh Government policies help currently to retain greater income within Wales? So the Welsh Government has set targets for local shared and community ownership, and such policy objectives are welcome, but currently do have a limited impact. To an extent, these policies are a wider recognition that the private renewables industry perhaps has not delivered enough local benefit to communities. And we find that the broad definition of local ownership, we explore this in greater detail in the report, but we do find that it is limited with no specification of proximity to projects, and runs a potential risk of being open to exploitation by people that are neither local nor Welsh, being actually able to be considered as local owners of energy projects. On shared ownership, this is when ownership is split between perhaps a private commercial renewable energy developer and then also a local community member, individuals, or even local Welsh businesses. And this can include individuals or community-owned energy. But on shared energy, ownership of energy projects, which is between two or more entities, the Welsh Government have advised a preference for the commercial renewables developers to offer shared ownership. However, this isn't mandated, and we heard through our interviews with community energy leaders that while some developers have engaged really well and actually offered community energy shared ownership on their projects, other leading renewable energy developers have not, and potentially avoid offering shared ownership alongside community energy leaders, and this limits the impact of this policy. Furthermore, the Senedd's Climate Change and Environment and Infrastructure Committee report in 2022 noted that the Welsh Government's position on shared ownership is not sufficiently clear and should provide stronger direction to commercial developers and develop appropriate policies to encourage and incentivise shared ownership on new commercial developments. So we think that reform of these policies is needed, and potentially mandating commercial developers to offer shared ownership, as the sort of approach of guidance isn't fully being followed. So there are limitations to the degree to which local and shared ownership policies deliver redistribution and retention of economic prosperity for local ordinary people. There are financial barriers that do limit average people from investing in these wind farms, and may currently provide actually an investment opportunity for those most resourced. Then looking at the Welsh Government recently established Ynni Cymru, a publicly owned energy company to further community-owned energy projects across Wales, and Trydan Gwyrdd Cymru, a publicly owned renewable energy developer. And while we await further details on the level of ownership that the Welsh Government will have, these Trydan Gwyrdd Cymru will operate on the Welsh Government's woodland estate. But we currently don't know if the Welsh Government will own generation on the Welsh public estate, or if they will play a key role in enabling and directing private developers to deliver jointly publicly private owned projects, due to the potential lack of expertise and the huge financial barriers for the Welsh Government to own ownership. It might be likely that these will be public private projects, and therefore, while we await further information, Trydan Gwyrdd Cymru will not be responsible for all new renewable energy developments in Wales, and Wales will still rely heavily on a large level of private sector renewable development. Therefore, while Tredangwyd Cymru is a much-needed initiative that we are very supportive of, it will likely only take Wales so far in retaining further benefits. And so between Tredangwyd Cymru and any Cymru of state-owned developers and in the private sector, how can Wales retain greater benefits from commercial developments also? So then, looking at the case of community benefit funds. Moving on to the next slide. A community benefit fund is a voluntary commitment by the renewable energy developer to pay into a fund which is made available to finance community projects. And if anyone wants any clarification on this, I'm happy to provide so after the presentation. But most commonly, community benefit funds relate to the scale of the energy project and are calculated on size, basically, per installed megawatt of capacity. And so the recommended level of community benefit funds in the UK for onshore wind is largely set by Renewable UK, the trade body, and stands at around 5,000 per megawatt of installed capacity. And research by Renewables UK Cymru shows that the onshore wind sector in Wales currently delivers 6.5 million annually to local communities that host renewables projects through existing community benefit schemes. With a forecast pipeline in excess of 2.2 gigawatts of onshore wind in coming years, community benefit fund, just on current provision, could grow to nearly 20 million annually. So given the potential for the use of community benefit funds to become more standardised across renewable technologies with increased use in nuclear and solar and wider technologies, and as development must increase as Wales aims to achieve net zero targets of green energy generation, we believe we're at a key moment of opportunity to see greater policy outputs from the Welsh Government to work with developers to allow for more impactful community benefit funds and allow Wales to capture this investment. But despite this, there is actually little Welsh Government policy or guidance relating to community benefit funds in Wales. And the Welsh Government policy largely defers to the trade body and to guidance set by Renewable UK Cymru. However, this current community benefit guidance has actually not been increased since 2013 and still stands at 5,000 per megawatt of installed capacity. And we believe that the time's come for this to likely be increased. So why provide community benefit funds? Well, the reason behind provision is important. They can be considered a voluntary gesture of goodwill by developers and a positive engagement from developers to local communities that host infrastructure. And our research found that this was the most common reason for establishing a community benefit fund when we talked to developers. They can also be set up and defined as a response to community demand where the community want to be compensated or want a return of benefits. However, this is more rare. Or they can be a statutory condition or policy imposed by local authorities. And we have seen examples of this across the UK and in Wales. These are less common, but for example, the Highland Council in Scotland and Neath Talbot County Borough Council in Wales have both established their own set policy guidance on community benefit funds from renewable energy projects. So while the rationale can differ, are community benefit funds a contribution to the local community or compensation? So we aim to explore this, and through our research, we found that while overwhelmingly, all developers told us that they perceived community benefit funds to be a contribution to the local economy and the local community. It was blurred. It was actually sometimes more complex than this. So they're often described as a contribution and are seen as a contribution, understood as payments by developers looking to make a positive impact in the local community that hosts the project. And all developers, as I said, we interviewed, unanimously stated that the provision of community benefit funds was a contribution. They can also be seen as a way to foster greater local acceptance. So they can be perceived as a way of building local support towards the renewable energy project. They do also play a role in compensating impact. However, there was a push from developers, and understandably so, to not have community benefit funds be seen as a compensation, because the planning system is obviously used to mitigate any negative impacts of projects. But they may also acknowledge that there is an impact to a varying level to local communities and residents, and the funds can be used to address impacts, particularly around construction. However, we found with how developers sort of talk about the community benefit funds and decide the scope of beneficiary communities, some developers noted that they do prioritise areas most impacted by the project during construction. So we did find in our research that while developers didn't want to be perceived as compensating impact, impacted did come into the conversation sometimes. And then they can also be seen as a redistribution of profits, where they're a form of economic redistribution, sharing the benefits to local communities, as we discussed before. But diversion definitions of community benefit funds are important because they influence the way in which recipient communities are defined and therefore subsequently how funds are established and dispersed. Within offshore wind, community benefit fund provision and definitions have potentially real impacts. If there is no local community because projects are further and further offshore and there is little to no visual impact by a development, then there may be reason to not provide a community benefit fund at all. If community benefit funds are perceived as a return of profits to local communities and are seen within this wider sort of redistributive justice aspect as part of the just transition where communities should benefit from local projects, even if they are offshore, there may be therefore more scope to provide community benefit fund payments to coastal communities within a wider area. And we have seen this happening in Wales. The Gwyntymore Offshore Community Fund is actually given to quite a wide range of communities across Conwy, Denbighshire and Flintshire of coastal areas. But without strong policy guidance from the Welsh Government in relation to community benefit funds, particularly in the emerging sector of floating offshore wind, with no guidance on how community benefit funds should be understood and defined, there is potential for Wales's coastal communities to miss out from substantial community benefit funds that do have local impact. So therefore, we would encourage Welsh Government to develop guidance here and grasp the opportunity to capture this wider private sector investment. So then what are the economic impacts of community benefit funds? They are the main source of long-term local benefit for communities from onshore wind farms, with the potential to secure positive impacts within local areas. However, little is known about their economic impact in Wales. And this is because there's currently no data or mechanism used to capture the rate of community benefit funding coming into Wales. When we first set up this project, we really wanted to try and have an annual figure of sort of what were the rates of community benefit funding, what were the levels of provision, but this information is currently not collected nor held. And therefore, we can't know the full impact of provision, the levels, if they're 5,000 across the board, if they differ, nor ascertain what best practice really looks like. And in Scotland, their voluntary community benefit funds register and map has been a vital resource for communities, government and developers to understand levels of funding. And this map also helps communities to understand levels that other developers offer and actually empowers communities to know if the offer of their local community benefit fund is in line with other developers or is potentially over sort of standard levels or is potentially under, and then can empower them to take on negotiations with the developers. And so this community benefit fund register and map has increased transparency of community benefit fund rates offered and empowered communities to understand if they're being given a fair deal. And conversations with civil servants in Scottish Government, actually, we found that they found with the use of the public facing map, they believe that it's led to a levelling out of community benefit funds where they've all kind of now gradually come up to 5,000 and have averaged out across the board. And that third sort of factor authentication has been really useful because communities can put information on there, developers can voluntarily put information on there, and then Local Energy Scotland also check the data. So it's just sort of making it more publicly available, that knowledge really. So we believe that this would be a vital step for the Welsh Government to reintroduce a community benefit register. There was one formerly, and we think that it would be a really good time to reintroduce a community benefit funds register, which would allow communities and developers to voluntarily fill in this information and gain the data that we really need. But then on levels of community benefit funding, beyond onshore wind, there are no guidance rates set for solar and other technologies by Renewables UK Cymru. But I do believe that this is something that the sector is looking at bringing in. And this currently does present a missed opportunity to capture investment. In Scotland, the Scottish Government have got policy across different technologies, and particularly in solar. So through our research, we found divergent community benefit fund rates on solar developments in Wales and relatively varying degrees of knowledge on what rates should be. We found rates for solar developments were differed greatly from a one-off payment of something like £200, £500, £1,000 to an annual community benefit fund of £200 to £400, or even in some cases £1,000 per megawatt of installed capacity. And where that was £1,000, it was actually because a local authority had required this. And the reason that rates for solar are lower than onshore wind is because of different costs of and profit margins compared with wind energy technologies. So they are lower than sort of the onshore wind sector. But we believe that there is scope for Welsh Government to set their own policy guidance here in relation to setting community benefit fund rates for solar energy and leading to just more of a level playing field across the board then. Currently, it's kind of a postcode lottery whether you have the luck of a developer that does give high or fair community benefit fund provision on solar, and there are lots of cases where there is no fund given. So of the developers and case studies we were able to examine via interviews, surveys and freedom of information requests, our research found that of the sort of information we got, which you know can't be replicated across the whole of Wales, but we found that community benefit funds rates offered fluctuate quite a lot actually across communities. Sometimes they exceed £5,000 per megawatt of installed capacity, but also often they fall below this recommended guidance rate. One example in the paper reveals that a project in Anglesey having a community benefit fund rate of £2,062 established in the 1990s was extended, and the wind farm was extended in 2022, but the community benefit fund rate only went up to 3,000 in over 20 years. And actually this was far below the guidance rate of 5,000. So it appears through our research that the power to set community benefit fund level still remains with developers. And despite guidance set since 2013 of recommending a rate of 5,000 per megawatt of installed capacity, this isn't always being followed, and communities have little power to affect these rates. Our work did find that local authorities can exert influence over obtaining higher community benefit fund rates. However, understanding at the local authority level differs greatly. In Neath Port Talbot, our research found that the council had used a Section 106 agreement to require the developer to pay a higher rate of CBF levels of 5,000 to 6,500 per megawatt of installed capacity. However, the same developer on similar developments within the same time frame within nearby local authorities where they weren't required to give a higher rate of community benefit fund by a local authority gave community benefit funds of less than half of this amount as they were not required to give higher rates. So largely, we find that local authorities can implement policy guidance to influence community benefit fund rates. This might not be most effectively done through Section 106s, but having policy guidance can really help to drive up and increase community benefit fund rates within local areas and encourage sort of higher community benefit fund commitments for residents in discussions and dialogue with developers. However, research from the Coalfields Regeneration Trust in Wales found varying levels of confidence and understanding between local authorities exists. So there is potential that without stronger policy of set rates for community benefit funds, communities basically face a bit of a postcode lottery of uneven provision. If you're lucky to live in a local area that has had quite a lot of development and a quite resourced and ex- understanding a local authority that will, that has set policy or will discuss obtaining higher rates with developers, then you're lucky. But if you don't, and the local authority maybe doesn't understand their role that they can play, then you might miss out. And we did find in our research one large scale wind project in planning currently with no commitment to provide any community benefit fund. And there are fears that that community would lose out on 125,000 annually. And in this example, the local authority don't believe that they have power to engage with the developer and obtain higher levels of funding. So while local authorities do have a role to play, the understanding of the role that they can play really, really differs and has actually quite big impact on subsequent community benefit fund levels. And we find that the difference in outcomes across local authorities is evidence of a system that's failing to work in the best interests of communities, and they're missing out due to this lack of awareness. So mandating a set level of community benefit fund could ease pressure on local authorities and local planning authorities in Wales, and allow for fairer provision of community benefit funds across communities. And we have actually found that examples where developers would welcome mandating a set level of community benefit fund, because it would take community benefit funds out of a competitive process between developers and allow more certainty. And this could be explored through reforms to the planning system. And I can pick this up later if anyone would like to talk about it. And then higher levels of funding. So what is the scope for obtaining higher levels of funding? With some developers now paying over 5,000, and Bute Energy offered over 7,500, rates have still not increased since 2013 when guidance was set. And so we really think now is the time to sort of up those levels of community benefit fund rates. So then the impact of community benefit funds. Evidently, rates of community benefit fund provision vary across communities. Despite this, community benefit funds allow local communities hosting onshore wind farms to capture private sector investment in the form of long-term financial payments. And our research found really good examples where developers are actually trying to achieve far greater economic and social impact with their community benefit funds, but haven't really got a wider set of Welsh Government policy to support their work. And all developers we asked would welcome greater policy guidance and best practice principles, including ideas on how to spend community benefit funds from Welsh Government. As we sort of look at the impact of community benefit funds then, and I'll have to skip through this because to get through the whole presentation, but Vattenfall's Penacamoedd wind farm is an example of quite a large scale fund of over 1.8 million annually to the local community. And we have examples from different developers where they're actually leading the way in terms of having sort of more novel approaches to achieving wider economic impact. The Penacamoedd Fund made grants available to support businesses and enterprise development within the local economy, and the Clycaenog Forest Wind Farm Fund, a key priority of this fund was to grow and impact the wider economy with a range of funding levels, including a business fund. So while this is more rare, we do see community benefit funds actually being used to invest in local businesses and grow the local economy and development. Furthermore, while this wasn't sort of common, we did see developers conducting pre-assessment of local economic and social need. This wasn't common across the board, but it helped build sort of findings into the wider vision of community benefit funds that were based on the local area and what that local area might need to sort of grow the local economy and have the best impact. And some developers also have annual impact assessments of the community benefit funds. But again, these weren't commonplace. And so policy in this area would be really useful. And then prior to our research, the sort of prior research in this area has also looked at the potential for Welsh Government to aggregate or top slice a portion of community benefit funding, which would then be held at a national level and redistributed to have greater economic impact. They would allow for joined up national policy to enable profits retained from commercial projects are spread more evenly among communities with targeted impact. There is some resistance to top slicing funds, which would limit the bottom up community involvement. However, we also uncovered a number of barriers that actually show not all community members are equally able to engage in funds. Therefore, top slicing portions of funds could be a more democratic way to achieve greater targeted impact. and on the barriers limiting the impact. So I can come back to this if anyone wants to explore some of them. But generally, the activities funds are mostly used for limit the sort of wider economic impact that funds can have, sort of doing up local buildings, renovating a church, or sponsoring local football kits. While this may be what the local community wants, there's questions over whether this actually brings sort of growth to the local community. We found barriers that limited communities' engagement was a lack of information around community benefit funds and how to apply, concern regarding time, capacity, and the confidence and skills required to complete forms. And one respondent that we spoke to said that they found the experience tedious and bureaucratic and lacked support. So definitely there's room for policy in this area, and the Scottish Government's Community Benefits Toolkit is a clear example where the Scottish Government are leading the way on supporting both developers and community to have more effect. So then beyond community benefit funds, retaining wealth to communities and international case studies, while we've looked at ways we could reform community benefit fund provision, what other policy initiatives are there that Wales could look to? So community ownership across all of our research came up as one of the best ways to deliver increased autonomy, empowerment and resilience by providing long-term impact and local control over finances. This is where communities have the chance to own local energy generation. So in Canada, community ownership of renewable energy developments is emerging as a potential pathway to reconciliation and a just transition with Indigenous communities. While there is a different sort of political and cultural context, they've shown that through different levels of community ownership and Indigenous ownership, they can facilitate communities that might find financial barriers that limit their ownership of energy and help them with this. And there's some really great learning from there. Then Denmark, the Danish government has imposed a novel statutory policy to compel renewable energy developers to establish co-ownership model that ensures all new onshore and nearshore wind farms must have 20% of projects owned by local communities within a 5K radius. And community ownership drives the energy transition. So there's clear learning from other states on how we can have increased community energy on commercial projects in Wales, but this has to be mandated. And then looking at the role of sovereign wealth funds, we believe that a Wales wealth fund would be a useful policy initiative for the Welsh Government to explore. Norway's sovereign wealth fund, along with the Shetland Charitable Trust, both allowed revenues from oil and gas industries to be saved and maintained for the benefit of future generations. Both retained profits from finite fossil fuel resources. However, renewables projects do only last for a set amount of time and have a lifespan. And therefore, we believe there is scope to apply the same argument and capture profits from green energy for future generations. So then the wider recommendations, again, happy to talk to some of these in greater detail in the questions. But our first recommendation would be repowering communities and reforming community benefit funding. In order to retain greater economic impact, we have set out a number of key reforms to community benefit fund provision in Wales, and we believe these should be a key ask for the new Welsh Government Cabinet to really achieve the best impact and also support private sector renewables to have better impact. Currently, we find developers are actually leading the way in having some novel approaches, while other developers perhaps could do with some policy guidance. The second recommendation then is to establish best practice through Trydanwy Cymru, ensuring a minimum of 30% of community ownership on their future developments to maximise retaining income and increased economic impact for communities. As the Welsh Government formalises the role of Trydanwy Cymru, they should explore the possibility of community ownership where possible. Where this may be tricky to achieve, we expect to see to observe the best practice of community benefit funds across state-owned projects. Recommendation three then was to accelerate community ownership on commercial projects. Learning from the Danish example, we think that Welsh Government should compel all new commercial renewable projects above 5 megawatts to have a minimum level of 15% of community and local ownership by 2028. The Welsh Government should learn from the Danish government's example, where this policy did not attract investment from the private sector. The Welsh Government should work with developers to explore offering a range of community ownership models and reducing upfront financial barriers that may currently limit economic disadvantaged communities in Wales. And then lastly, reinvest for future generations. We believe the Welsh Government should establish a sovereign wealth fund for Wales, a Wales wealth fund, and reinvest income from renewable energy projects for long-term benefits of future generations. The fund would capture sovereign wealth payments of at least 15%, sorry, of net revenues made from large-scale onshore wind projects with an installed capacity of 50 megawatts alongside community benefit funds. And I'll leave it there and we can go to questions because I'm conscious of time. But if anyone does have any questions, happy to take them and answer.
Thank you very much, Lydia. Yeah, really comprehensive viewpoint of the of what the report looked at and what it did as well. I'm noticing, you know, on the chat sheet some questions that some, you know, may veer outside of you know, what the particulars of the project looked at, but you know, all valid questions as well. So I guess it, I want to flag now as well that it's a really detailed and in-depth report, so I'd urge you all to read it as it kind of portrays the journey that Wales is potentially going on for the next decade as we get towards net zero, and explores a number of different options going forward as well. We've also had a number of pre-submitted questions as well that I'd like to get to. First of which was that your report explores Scotland's CBFs as a case study of, you know, where Wales could potentially learn from the administration of community benefit funds. What do you think then that Welsh Government can take from community benefit funds and the wider policy context in Scotland? You know, is it delivering what they hoped it would deliver, and what can Wales learn?
I think in Scotland you see the sort of community benefit fund toolkit a real useful aid to communities and developers. Actually, it feels that some developers are really trying to achieve greater impact in Wales through community benefit funds, but without the overarching sort of policy of what the Welsh Government actually wants to see. We saw Julie James say she wanted to achieve a gold standard of community benefit fund provision in Wales, but we don't see what that is. So the toolkit in Scotland has actually held the hands of sort of developers and communities, and has tackled some of those barriers that I mentioned over accountability, transparency, confidence and skill, which are key issues within many Welsh communities.
And what about, you know, we're at a moment right now where Welsh and UK Labour are potentially on different pathways on ensuring community benefit funds the energy transition. We've got Keir Starmer in Wales today to make presumably a big announcement on, you know, the role the public sector plays on that. But equally in Wales, we've got a new cabinet wherein we've got a new economy and energy Secretary of State. Do you think that is a good step in terms of tying economy and energy closer together, as it's such a big, you know, proposal going forward? And also, what are those different pathways that you see between Wales and potential UK Labour government in the future in terms of renewables?
Yeah, I think obviously the portfolio of climate change before was probably huge, and maybe there is reason to split that out. And I think it's useful that economy and energy are together under Jeremy Miles's portfolio, but obviously planning and other issues sort of span other ministers, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, sorry, Joe, was the question how UK and Welsh Labour link on sort of the wider approach?
Yeah, do you think they're on different pathways on the renewable energy generation journey, I guess?
I think in some ways, obviously, Welsh Government are ahead with already establishing Trydanwydd Cymru. I know Keir Starmer is going to outline some more information on GB Energy. But with the U-turn of funding on GB Energy, really brings into question how much impact this can actually have as a sort of state-owned developer. Without this concern that without, you know, huge levels of funding, really, it's not going to achieve the impact needed. But on other things, I think they're ahead of the game because, well, the UK Labour Party has called for a national wealth fund. And so we really see that Wales should have their own Wales Wealth Fund, not be sort of receiving benefit money via sort of Westminster, and shouldn't be retained at a UK level, but actually Wales should explore having a Wales Wealth Fund and following that in that line. So broadly, I guess they are quite similar. I think probably from Welsh Government, maybe there's been a slight more focus on community energy so far, but we're set to see more from Keir Starmer, I think.
And what about community benefit funds as a mechanism? I guess we had a few questions to this effect from attendees today. Is that, you know, about the governance of community benefit funds, what is community benefit projects money going towards, and, you know, is merely increasing the amount of money that goes towards CBFs going to result in them going to more transformative projects? I know you spoke about top slicing, but if you could maybe explore that, you know, is the money that's currently in the system being used, you know, as it's envisaged?
No, and I think that's the one area where developers expressed the need for, like, maybe some policy support from Welsh Government. It's not just trying to have more money, because if the money isn't being used to great effect, then we still won't achieve a sort of better economic impact. So I think examples where that is going well would be really useful for Welsh Government to kind of have a case study of, these are the types of things we think you can do to achieve greater impact. And we've seen examples of that with investing in sort of local business businesses in Wales, and things like retraining opportunities, or even, you know, sort of renewable energy car fleets. There are better things that we can do with this money that aren't sort of sponsoring local football kits. So I think there's a conversation around mandating higher levels, but there's really, really a conversation around, the developers are happy to give this money, and in some cases give quite a bit, but maybe they just need support from Welsh Government actually to realise more of an impact of these funds. So I think there's definitely room for policy there.
Yeah, and a question from the audience as well was, you know, how will the Welsh Government help with community funding in regards to community energy projects? I guess it's slightly out of scope, but, you know, how can Welsh Government help the community energy sector in this broader picture of different pathways to net zero and the renewable energy transition?
I think one of the big issues with sort of community energy is the upfront barriers, financial barriers that communities face, and I think that's why one of our recommendations was to look to greater community ownership on commercial projects. I think if we could, you know, utilise some with sort of retaining greater profits from the sector, that could be then reinvested into furthering community energy projects across Wales, particularly where communities are more economically disadvantaged. Those financial barriers really, really are quite stark. And then also in Canada, there was an example where private developers actually realised that as well as giving maybe financial support, they could give their expertise, so they could de-risk sort of the time at which communities invest and give that financial, that sort of wider expertise to people that, you know, are just starting out on how to set up their own energy projects.
Ooh, and a good question from Julia, which I'll kind of paraphrase, is about community benefit funds, but can reductions in subsidies for fuel tariffs for those living in areas hosting renewable energy generation and transmission projects, you know, what is the role of that really in addressing fuel poverty, especially as you spoke about some of those economic inequalities of sites that host renewable energy projects to date, at least? So do you see that as a role of capturing money in the system and using it for you know, redistribution in a way?
I think it does help. There's local area energy discounts have been applied in examples across the UK, but I think actually it goes back to the question of what we use the money for, and I think it'd probably be more of a long-term benefit to use community benefit funds to insulate homes within a certain set mile radius of projects. If you're just going to give people discounts off their energy bills, they're always likely going to be in sort of inefficient homes, whereas something that you could do to really benefit those communities would be to retrofit, is quite complex, but retrofit or insulate homes within a set mile radius of projects could really be something. I know it's something that developers have considered themselves, that would actually give them greater resilience and also be within the sort of wider agenda of reducing fuel poverty.
And within that as well, speaking to some of what was going on in the chat is, how does offshore wind fit into this? Obviously, most of this paper focuses on onshore wind and solar, but, you know, as it's a, you know, not linked to a particular community, although there's obviously complications around that, you know, what is the role within offshore wind as, you know, one of the great enablers of hitting what are quite ambitious net zero energy generation targets?
So I think that's the biggest thing from this project that we really wanted to kind of, well, not the biggest, but one of the big ones, was to kind of highlight we need set policy on what community benefit funds are for and when they're set up, because otherwise we might miss from sort of floating offshore wind opportunities that are going to be vast. You know, if community benefit funds are based on scale, then the potential investment from these projects could be really vast for potentially coastal communities. But actually, this is where maybe top slicing and aggregating funds might be useful if they're quite far out to sea and there's no real local community that can be identified. Then maybe for far offshore projects, they could be collated and then readministered through sort of local communities or used for things like sort of insulating communities' homes. But there was an example in Massachusetts where the local authority for offshore projects actually mandated through the planning system for offshore projects to give community benefits to the local coastal area. So I think there's a real need to kind of Welsh government to really put policy in place, given the likely increase of the future that floating offshore wind provides the UK economy, really.
Yeah, and I think that's a good example in regards to this also being a what should hopefully be a start of a conversation around what those solutions actually look like. And, you know, if you choose to ring fence what the benefit that comes from floating offshore wind, for example, then, it's a very different conversation to be having. And then it's a different position to be having that conversation. Yeah. You've already had that conversation around what onshore wind looks like. I think that fits into one of the other questions, which was on Crown Estate in Wales, which I can just answer flat out in regards to any commentary on the Crown Estate. IWA did a previous report, Re-energising Wales, where we robustly called for the devolution of the Crown Estate, as has been the case in Scotland. So, you know, not adjacent to this particular paper, but it's something that the IWA are part of calling for as well. A good question here on the amount of money that has been put forward for community benefit funds. Does the IWA think that the £5,000 per megawatt, do you think that's fair? Does it stand up to comparison with local national case studies as well, although all being a much larger percentage being owned by the nation state, I guess? Do you know why it was set at 5,000 is the question?
Yeah, so it was originally like 1,000 in the 90s, and then it's gradually gone up. And basically the Highland Council in Scotland set their own policy at a local authority level of 5,000. And basically after that, it quickly became standard across the UK, really, and was taken on by Renewables UK as key protocol. And so, but surprisingly, that hasn't changed since 2013. So I think there's a real need for, 10 years on, that should probably increase. But there are considerations. So the report calls for mandating community benefit funds at 8,000 per megawatt. We haven't gone like radical. We haven't gone 15. We've kept it quite modest. And the reason is developers aren't all the same. So when you're developing a project, actually the profit of onshore wind, for example, projects only start to make profit a few years into operation. And so when you're given those immediate community benefit funds, they're coming out for the first few years at a cost. And while that might be fine for large-scale European developers, for smaller-scale developers, that might be really difficult. So going to 8,000 seems like, based on the evidence, based on the fact that on the Welsh Government estate, the Welsh Government NRW required RWE to provide 8,000, and RWE were happy to do that. Bute are now offering 7,500 on their proposed project. So I think we are seeing, actually, perhaps guidance hasn't increased, but developers are okay to sort of offer a bit more. So, we need to be mindful of, if we're going to mandate something, it has to be achievable across the board. And obviously, developers can still go above and beyond that if they'd want to.
And in a sentence, you know, obviously, you've had quite a lot of engagement with private sector developers as part of this outreach. You know, it's not something that's been done without having those conversations. In a sentence, you know, what has been the outcome of those conversations? Has it been, yeah, actually we think there is a need for Welsh government to provide a bit more certainty, or and we can provide more, or, you know, what was the tone of those conversations? Was it positively framed, I guess?
On particularly on community benefit funds, the overall response from developers was that they would all welcome stronger policy guidance and best practice principles from Welsh government to support their wider work in that area.
Brilliant. Right. We're going to have to draw close. We've still got quite a few comments and questions. Lydia's going to be writing a piece for the IWA's online magazine, Welsh Agenda, about the report. And potentially she could pick up some of the questions and queries that have been raised in the comments section with just a number of the questions as well. But just want to thank everyone for turning up today and hearing about the report. Particular thanks to Lydia for all the hard work she's done on this project. Thanks for the conversation as well, everybody. It's been good to see so much engagement. engagement with the pathway to net zero and what this report puts forward as some potential fixes to what some of the concerns are as well. And once again, grateful thanks to Friends Provident Foundation, who support all of the IWA's economy policy work. Keep your eyes peeled as well. If you have any colleagues or friends who want to hear back about the report in this way, then we're going to put it up as a podcast and on YouTube, so you can pick that up. If you want to receive future early notifications about IWA events recordings of all of our sessions directly to your inbox without even having to go and look for them, then please join us as a member on the Support Us part of our website, www.iwa.wales. Thank you very much for coming. Keep your eyes peeled and please do read the whole report, because it's a really comprehensive view of where we've got to and where we could potentially go in the future. So thank you very much. Have a good rest of your Monday. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.